listening to Decision 2022 on WKDZ FM 106.5. We're coming to you tonight from The Way. We appreciate The Way opening their doors when we found out the Tree Cane Schools Little Theater was unavailable because of some much-needed renovation. We had to find another place and wanted to make this a public forum. We've done these in the past at our radio station, but a lot of interest in this race in particular tonight, the sheriff's race and all of our races this year as well. So we appreciate all of you being here. Great crowd in attendance, and we know a lot of folks are listening at home as well. So here's how the things will work for our sheriff candidates. Each one of you will have 2 minutes for an opening remark. And we'll start with Aaron Acree, our current sheriff, and move toward Mike Manzanares, Ronnie Mazak, David Tomlinson, and Mike Sandbrink. And then after we get done with our opening remarks, each of you, I will ask each of you a question. We'll start with Mr. Manzanares' first question, second question. And one, you can answer the question. Once you answer that question, anybody else who wants to answer the question, just raise your hand. We'll let you kind of go with that kind of format. So, and appreciate all of you guys. I know you're going to be very professional about how we handle things, thanks to the audience. And we've had a lot of great questions. We'll try to get as many of those questions in that we possibly can tonight and get some good questions answered where you can kind of help make up your mind about what you feel and what you feel is important here as well. But again, thank you all for being here tonight. We'll start off first of all with Aaron Acree, your opening remarks, Mr. Acree. And you can pick the microphone up and hold it. If you want to stand up, you're welcome to do that as well. Some folks in the audience have requested that all of our candidates stand up where they can see you better. So go ahead and begin with your opening remarks.
All right. Thank you, Alan. First and foremost, I thank God for the opportunity to be here tonight. Thank you, WKDZ, Brother Carl, Democratic and Republican Party, putting this on for us. Thank you all for attending tonight. It is great to see everyone in attendance and supporting this race. For those who don't know me, I am a 2008 graduate of Trigg County High School right across the street. I played football. I then started my law enforcement career in 2010. Hollis Alexander was the chief of police at the time. I was a patrolman for 5 years. After I finished my stint at Cady's, I went on to then pursue my dream at the Kentucky State Police, where I was accepted in 2015. I had the pleasure of working Post 1 Mayfield, Post 2 Madisonville during that stint. I had the privilege of being selected to work on the legislative detail, which entails providing security and protection for state representatives and other legislators there in Frankfort. In 2020, a little backstory that most people don't know is I got a phone call from Judge Hollis Alexander, and he asked me to consider the position of sheriff at the time. I respectfully declined the position. Life was good. I was living my dream. I'd worked tirelessly day in and day out for the position I wanted to be in, serving the Commonwealth as a trooper, where I'd earned that title. He told me then, consider it, take a few days and think about it. And it was at that moment I thought, you know, as a law enforcement officer, we that wear the badge go behind the creed of service above self. And when I declined the position, I wasn't thinking about the service. I was thinking about myself. And from then on, I thought, this is my community. This is a chance for me to come back and help put this place back on track. And from day in and day out, I've given this job and this community 110%. So I appreciate everyone being here tonight. I'm not here for the money. I'm not here for the power. I had all those things with the state police. I'm here because public safety is my number one concern in my home county. And I appreciate all you being here tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Acree. Appreciate that. And my opening statement now, Mr. Mike Manzanares. Mike.
Hi guys, my name is Mike Manzanares, and I'm glad to see that there's more than one person that's willing to stand up here and tell the folks that come out here that they are a believer in Jesus Christ, because I am too as well. And I do believe that's extremely important, because I think you get your moral compass from one of two places, either the Word or the world. And I get mine from the Word and what I do. That's where my moral compass comes from. And I saw fit to file as a write-in because my moral compass was telling me that something was wrong in Trigg County. So I am a retired sergeant with state police. I have supervised 3 different posts across the state. I've supervised Madisonville Post, I've supervised Mayfield Post, and I've supervised Campbellsburg Post. post, which is where the racetrack speedway detail is on the other side of Louisville. I have a wife, two children, and two grandchildren that all live here in Trigg County. My youngest son, Robert, was just like Mr. Acree, a football star here at Trigg County from middle school all the way until he graduated from high school. He still lives in the community. He's now a college student at Murray. My daughter is also a college student at Murray, and she's in the nursing program. So we have a vested interest in what goes on here in Trigg County. And both my grandbabies are now Trigg County schools. So it is my goal, with the experience that I have, to bring this community back to a healing point where we can all cooperate with one another, because I think it's extremely important that the community trust the law enforcement agency that serves them. When you call 911, you've already got one crisis on your hands. You don't want to wonder who's coming to your house. And that's my goal going forward. So I appreciate your vote, and I'm glad to see that a lot of you guys learned how to spell my name a lot faster than I did growing up. So I pass it on.
All right, opening remarks from Mr. Ronnie Mazak. Ronnie?
My name is Ronnie Mazak. I've been here all my life. I've seen a whole lot in this town, and I'd like to make it better. I don't have the experience these guys have, but I'd like to. I'm a clean slate. I'd like to learn everything, do everything. Worked in jail for 11 years. I've done a whole lot there, learned a whole lot there, saw people at their best and at their worst, and I just like to do more what I can for everybody. Just keep it short. I mean, that's all I can say. I care about everybody, and I want to treat everybody from the janitor to the CEO the same way. So I appreciate y'all's vote.
Thank you, Mr. Mazak. Appreciate that. And then Mr. David Tomlinson, your opening remarks, David. And yeah, you can use that, this one right here. That's perfect. David Tomlinson. David?
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it. Thank you to WKDZ and Carl and the way, everyone that put the hard work in here to make this happen tonight. My name is David Tomlinson. You know, I'm a father, my husband, grandfather, got two boys, got two grandsons. Been married to my wife, Tina, now for 28 years. Very beautiful lady. I tell everybody she's the brains behind this operation. She's the one that keeps me straight. She's the one out there, you know, keeping me straight right now. You know, we are about to celebrate our anniversary come November the 12th. So she's put up with me, and she continues to put up with me, and I greatly appreciate that. And I'm a Marine veteran, and I've got 20-plus years in law enforcement. I am a certified law enforcement to Richmond. I've been to the advanced police supervision. I've been to FTO school. Been a canine handler. And four of those 20-plus years that I've served in law enforcement, I served right here in Trigg County. When raised in Christian County, when Ray Burnham told me, when Ray Burnham hired me, I told him I wasn't going to move here. Well, that changed real quick once I started working here and started working with the community. We very quickly moved that very same year, and we've been here since 2016 here in Trigg County. So we are Christians. We are a member of Crossroads Fellowship Church here in Trigg County. We are vested in this community, and I say we because if it weren't for my wife and my family's support, wouldn't be able to do this job. What we need to do is get back and be one with the community as well. On November 8th, I appreciate if you write my name in, David Tomlinson. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you, Mr. Tomlinson. Now our opening remarks from Mr. Mike Sandbring. Mike?
I want to thank the way, WKDZ, for hosting this. Just a little bit about myself. I was raised in Ohio, left there at 18 to join the Army. That's how I got in the area. Was stationed at Fort Campbell for 6 years. That was during two enlistments. My last enlistment was with 5th Group. I was a supervisor of 10 other soldiers. Decided to to leave that and follow in my father's footsteps and become a police officer. I joined the Hopkinsville Police Department. Was there for almost 7 years. I was an FTO, trained many, many officers there, to include the chief that is there today. Had the opportunity to take a job advancement with Kentucky Vehicle Enforcement in 2005. In 2008, we merged with the Kentucky State Police. I became a canine handler. Was a canine handler for 8 years, involved in several drug seizures on the Kentucky roadways and highways in this state. After my tenure with that, I was a single parent, went back to Hopkinsville in 2018, my last 2 years. After that, I retired. 10 days into retirement, I received a phone call from the sheriff asking if he'd advised me that I was going to be the, if I would come and be the chief deputy. I humbly accepted. So in 2020, 10 days in retirement, I accepted the job, started November 1st with the Tree County Sheriff's Office as the chief deputy. I had several responsibilities, to include administrative and operations, to include body cams, fiscal court meetings where I was able to obtain new tasers, vests, get the guys' training scheduled, the vehicle fleet, and that was up until June 30th when my employment was terminated. Thank you.
All right, thanks to all of our candidates, your opening remarks, and we'll move to questions. And as you can see, I have a stack of note cards here. I have a lot of questions. May not make it through all of them. Some of these are kind of, some of these are about the same, so I may, if your question's not asked exactly as you wrote, it's probably because I'm looking at a couple of them and trying to put it together as a question I think that is very pertinent and that all these candidates can answer tonight. Since we started first of all with Aaron Acri for our first question, we'll start with Mr. Mike Manzanares for the first question. Aaron Acri starting with the opening statement, by the way. And you'll have 1 minute, about 1 minute, to answer these questions. So you can, first question is, outside of law enforcement experience, what makes you the best qualified, the most qualified candidate for sheriff, Mr. Mike Manzanares?
You're saying outside of law enforcement experience? Okay. I did serve 7.5 years, or 7 years, 3 months to be exact, in the United States Marine Corps. I did rise to the ranks of non-commissioned officer as a young corporal when I first got promoted, about 3.5 years in. I was transitioning from the infantry to aviation. Infantry will make an old man out of you quick, and I didn't want to reenlist for that. So they opted to allow me to do a transfer to another MOS, which I was good with that, or go home. So I decided to go into aviation. Aviation is something that I enjoyed, and I still fly to this day as a private pilot. So at that point, being a new corporal, going into a new MOS, I was in a class of about 40 people, and all of them are teenagers right out of boot camp. So they immediately thrust me at the front, be the acting platoon sergeant of 40 people, 40 kids, and I was 23 myself. That was my first command. So I was a kid leading a bunch of kids, but I quickly figured it out because after 3.5 years of doing infantry work, you knew how to organize based off of what you're taught in the infantry. So.
Thank you, Mr. Mike Manzanares. Anybody else want to comment on that question? Just raise your hand. You're welcome to comment on that. Outside of law enforcement experience, what makes you the best candidate or the most qualified candidate for sheriff? Mr. Acri, you can grab the microphone there and you can be make your comments on that question as well, okay?
Outside of law enforcement experience, the word COP, the acronym, is community-oriented policing. Got to have common sense. Got to have a heart, compassion in this job. Not everything warrants a citation. Not everything warrants an arrest. You know, not everybody deserves a trip to go to jail. You got to have common sense when you do this job and compassion when dealing with the people. You know, not everybody is a criminal that you deal with. And I grew up right here. I know most of you in this audience. I know most of everybody in the community, and they know me. And I think it makes this job that much easier when you're in the position of authority. And you can control the outcome and the environment and the situation you're dealing with outside of just having police experience, because a lot of this job isn't just police experience. It's dealing with the people and their problems.
Thank you very much. Anybody else want to comment on that question? Just raise your hand. Let me know. We'll, if not, we'll move on to question number two. Okay. Nobody else wants to talk about that one, so we'll move to the next one. Okay. Past sheriff candidates, and we'll go to Mr. Ronnie Mazak first of all on this question. Past sheriff candidates have promised 24-hour coverage for the county 7 days a week, but have been unable to sustain this for various reasons. How will you make 24/7 patrol for Trigg County a reality if elected, or is it time to admit this cannot be accomplished under the current makeup? Mr. Mazak, first question to you, first of all.
I feel it can be accomplished. I feel like it's, I mean, I would do it myself if need be, but I've always felt like the Rockcastle, Canton, all those, they just don't get the coverage they're supposed to have. And I mean, there's more crime than just right here in this area, I mean, in this little part. And how to go about it, I mean, it's, you know, that's where the money for more deputies and all that come in, and more overtime or whatever, but that would be one of my major things that I'd want to do. I mean, that would be mine.
Okay, very good. Anybody else? Mr. Tomlinson, to grab the microphone. You're welcome to answer the same question. How will you make 24-hour coverage in Trigg County a reality?
It was a reality when I was a deputy there. We had 24-hour coverage. We had somebody on these streets 24 hours a day when I was there, and it's simply going back and working the schedule different and putting the people back on the road where they belong. What I'm also what I've been thinking about is what Sheriff Akery talked about is cops. I was initially hired when I started in law enforcement on what's called a cop's grant. So I was basically, I've been raised up in community-oriented policing ever since day one of my law enforcement career started. So I would like to take a look at that and be able to hire at least one or two deputies under a cop's grant here, which would further help get that 24-hour coverage.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mike Sandbrink, go ahead, Mike. You've got the microphone. Go ahead next. Mr. Manzanares, coming to you after that.
This is a problem we had in our administration. With the amount of manpower that we did have with Aaron, it was not enough. And we went to fiscal court, and we were begging for more people. And I understand there's a budget, but I had a magistrate I won't name come to my office, and I explained to her that, I just named her. So, sorry, Alana. But it was very good, and I was very appreciative. She came to my office because she cared, and I showed her my calendar on my wall with every day of the month in it, or every day of the year, rather. And, you know, you've constantly, out of the eight or nine of us, to include the sheriff, you've got in-service training. Everybody's gone for a week, vacation, maternity, sick, holiday. It is very hard. So us as supervisors, to include Aaron, myself, we plugged a lot of holes, and we plugged those holes for free. And in the future, I think that is something that we really need to look at. We do need more deputies.
All right. Anybody else? Mr. Mazak, I think, or Mr. Mazanares, I think you wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, this is actually a very difficult question, but I have written a schedule for the state police for multiple posts for multiple years, and I actually was the one that was writing the schedule for the sheriff's department, because when I hired in as a part-time deputy, there was no schedule being put out. So I had absolutely no idea what holes I was supposed to come out and plug, because there was no holes listed. So I had to wait on a phone call, basically, for someone to call my house at the last minute and say, can you come out and cover a hole? So I went to the sheriff at that point and asked him, do you mind if I write the schedule, because there's not one being done? So from that point forward, as a part-time deputy, I started writing the schedule for the sheriff's department. Now, mind you, this is a trick, because when you're dealing with just a handful of people and you want two guys out on the road all the time, it's next to impossible to have 24-hour coverage. Because one thing's going to happen. Either you're going to have guys working by themselves, or you're going to have a gap in coverage, one of the two. Now, Trigg County, fortunately, those of you that live here know this, the sidewalks roll up at a certain hour, and you don't see a car for hours. And the guy that's working in the middle of the night is kicked back at the sheriff's office with his feet on the table watching TV or doing whatever else, because there's really nothing going on. So that's where we were at that point. You can literally drive around for hours and not find a car. Now, do I agree with this coverage? No, I don't. But if you don't have the manpower to do it, but you still want officer safety, that is what you have to do in order for you to have backup going to calls. So that's what I did with the schedule whenever I took over, was I started doing overlapping coverage so that there was two guys, and if you had a hot call and somebody was going to something that was dangerous, they had somebody that was coming right behind them so that they could handle that situation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Manzanares. Anybody else want to, Sheriff Hager, you want to comment on that question? Okay.
I will comment on that. The topic is 24-hour coverage. We have 24-hour coverage, whether it's one deputy, two deputies. We've modified our schedule to have deputies working three 12-hour shifts now. We are down to one position, but we do have 24-hour coverage. It's not a manpower issue, but I will agree that you can never have too many police. You can never have too many police. Police need backup. The state police is far and few between in this county, and people know that. If the state police is taking a call, it's because we're busy. It's not because we're sitting around going, oh, we don't want to do this. I'm a hands-on sheriff. I'm a working sheriff. I get a lot of complaints where people come into my office and say, hey, we didn't see you in there. Well, I'm probably working a burglary or collision investigation. But we do have 24-hour coverage. Some of the issues we ran into was the scheduling, the way the coverage was. You know, not everybody can have weekends off. If you're a supervisor and you're in the position of leadership, it's your responsibility to step up and cover that shift. Whether you're new to policing or you're retired, it's your responsibility to step up and cover that shift if a man needs off for family time. I always tell my guys, family first, work is a distant second. You're in the position to step up and cover that schedule if the deputy's not able to work it. We do have 24-hour coverage.
Thank you, Mr. Acree. And we'll remind you, Ed's telling me, said, but don't run the stop sign here. Be careful. So just to kind of, when you see the stop sign come up, just kind of bring your comments and thoughts to a close. Next question, we'll move on to, obviously, with the exception of where you are right now or your current law enforcement experience, what supervisory experience have you had over your term in law enforcement? Tell us about your supervisory experience. We'll start with Mr. Tomlinson, first of all, for this question.
I have had a lot of supervisory experience. I'd like Mr. Manzanares was talking about in the Marine Corps. I went from all the way up to the rank of sergeant before I left out of the Marine Corps. I got into law enforcement. I've been a sergeant in law enforcement, been a lieutenant, been a major here at Trigg County Sheriff's Office. And then when Sheriff Barnes come in, took over, I was taken back down to the rank of sergeant and I became a canine handler. And I've had that leadership experience in the Marine Corps and law enforcement. I've also had those classes in Richmond, advanced police supervision, which is where you go when you become a sergeant, sergeant's course. So yeah, I've had plenty of experience in being a leader in and out of law enforcement.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tomlinson. And Mr. Sam Brinks grabbing the microphone next. Go ahead and tell us about your supervisory experience throughout your career.
Throughout my career, I started as a 22-year-old. I attained the rank of E5 sergeant in the military and attended several leadership courses, non-commissioned officer courses, and was there until I ETS'd out. When at Hopkinsville, your field training officer is a low-level supervisor, obviously, as you're training new recruits to come in. And to the day at Trigg County Sheriff's Office, I came in as the major there.
Thank you very much. Anybody else want to comment on that question? We'll start. Just raise your hand or tell me no. Okay. Mr. Manzanares, you raised your hand first, so go ahead and comment your supervisory experience throughout your law enforcement career, okay?
Okay, so aside from the Marine Corps, like we were talking about earlier, this just focused on law enforcement itself. One thing about the Marine Corps is that when you gain rank into supervisors' positions, they're vetted positions. That means that it is a challenge for you to get promoted into a leadership position. You have to meet a board. You have to actually do several things to qualify to just be a candidate to then compete with other people to get that spot. That's not the way it is in law enforcement with a lot of agencies. With the sheriff's department, it's not that way. You could just pick your buddy and say you're major. With the state police, it works the way the Marine Corps does. When you get promoted at that point, there is a rigorous process that you have to go through, and you have to compete with other people, and you have to be the top candidate in order for you to get that spot. As a state police sergeant, I fought very hard and went through a rigorous process to beat out, within a 1,000-man agency, multiple other people to get that position. I was a state police sergeant at three different posts, as well as a detective sergeant, and I've led multiple areas across the state police from here to the other side of Louisville. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Manzanares. And next, anybody, either other two candidates want to comment on that, your supervisory experience? Mr. Akery, go ahead.
Yeah, to comment on the supervisor experience prior to taking the position of sheriff, I had none. But I had a huge responsibility of upholding the law and maintaining public safety in the Commonwealth. If you listen to the timeline of my introductory, 2010 is when I started my law enforcement career. I was able to advance very quickly in my career just using common sense. But although supervisory experience is extremely important in this role, but I think common sense and knowledge of the community and where you're working goes hand in hand with that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masek. You want to comment on that? If not, we'll move on to the next question, okay? We'll move on to next question on the list. This goes to Mr. Mike Sandbrink. First of all, if you find out a close relation has committed a crime, what are you going to do about that? Tell us, if you find out a close relation has committed a crime, if someone close to you has committed a crime, how do you address that? How will you address that as sheriff?
So you're saying
a close relation to you, someone in your family or maybe a friend or someone you know, how will you handle that situation?
Unfortunately, I've had that happen. I've had a close relationship with someone quite many years ago, and it was on a traffic stop that someone that I was close to who was intoxicated. I'm not the type that's going to negate my duty and what I need to do. You know, I called another patrolman in to take it and to effect the arrest, so to say. So I'm not one that's going to turn a blind eye because it's a friend or relative or anything like that. You know, our job is to uphold the law, and I think that's what the community expects.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mike Sandbrink on that. WKDC FM, Cadence Hopkins, of Princeton. You're listening to Decision 2022. Anyone else want to comment on that question? What will you do if you a close relation is committing a crime? What are you going to do as a sheriff? Mr. Tomlinson?
Well, I'd have to agree with Mr. Sandbrink as far as that's concerned. It doesn't matter if it's your mom, dad, brother, sister. Doesn't matter who you are, what your name is, how much money you got. If you break the law, there's consequences. You made the choice, there's consequence for what you did. Whether it's a good choice or a bad choice determines whether you have a good consequence or a bad consequence. So I definitely have to agree, you got a job to do regardless. So I would make the arrest.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Anybody else want to comment on that? Mr. Manzanares, go ahead, grab the microphone in front of you, and you can comment on that question as well.
Unfortunately, guys, this happens quite often when you're dealing with the community that you live in. You're going to inevitably come across somebody that's close to you and that's done something wrong. This has happened to me multiple times. The best way to handle a situation like that is to recuse yourself from that investigation and have somebody that does not know them come and do it for you, because you cannot be biased in a situation where your daughter or your son or your wife or your cousin or somebody that's close to you has done something wrong, and you can't handle that situation without a bias. You just can't do it. So that's my answer, and that's what I've done throughout the course of my career more than one occasion.
Thank you, Mr. Manzanares. Anybody else on that one? And Mr. Akery, go ahead. Grab the microphone. Go ahead.
Everybody knows my last name is Acree. I'm kin to the Alexanders, kin to the Tylers, kin to the Binghams. I've had to deal with my family a lot, you know. Sometimes there's discretion involved. It just depends on what the circumstances are. However, sometimes you don't have the luxury of calling another officer. This is a small town. It might be 1 o'clock in the morning. You stumble upon a car and it's your uncle or your cousin or your best friend from high school. You don't always have the luxury of calling someone else to come in and not be biased. Your job is to not be biased. You know, uphold the law, effect the arrest, issue the citation, or further investigation to see if it warrants either one of those two. However, just make sure you do the job to where you can lay your head down at night, to where you know you did the best that you could.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anybody else want to comment on that question? If not, we'll move forward. I think we're good on maybe all minds are clear on that one. Now we'll start back on the at the top of the list again. Mr. Acree, your next question will be for you first of all, and anybody else can comment on it as well. If coming on the scene not as first responder and find excessive force being used, what are you obligated to do as an officer, as a sheriff? No, Mr. Acree first, yeah.
Could you repeat that one more
time? Yeah, sure, be glad to. If coming on the scene not as first responder and say you're assisting Kansas Police Department or Kentucky State Police, find excessive force is being used, what are you obligated to do in that situation?
Just like you said, if excessive force is being used, you're obligated to mitigate it, stop the excessive force, intervene. We want to always de-escalate the situation, even if that means pulling the suspect away, putting handcuffs on the suspect right away, whatever we can to mitigate or de-escalate the situation. But to answer that is to intervene into those circumstances.
And same question. Anybody else wants to answer that, Mr. Manzanares? I think you're reaching for the microphone. Go ahead.
Again, if you're dealing with someone, if you're just an officer, you're not a supervisor. If you're an officer and you're dealing with someone that you're witnessing that's using excessive force, you're still obligated to protect every individual in the Commonwealth, regardless of whether or not they're an officer or not. So if you see someone's being victimized, you got to stop it from happening first. And then second of all, if you're not that person's immediate supervisor, then you need to have a conversation with whoever that person's immediate supervisor is after you've had a conversation with him. So it has to be stopped at that point from happening again, whether it means the supervisor picks up that deal and does an investigation at that point or whatever the case may be going forward. So,
Mr. Sam Brink, same question to you.
I was the in charge of the body cam. I'm a big proponent of the body cam, and I think this would alleviate many times when there is an accusation of any kind of excessive force. You know, it's a thing. It is an outstanding tool in law enforcement, and I made sure that everybody that was under my supervision wore one, and that was on every call for service.
All right. Anybody else want to comment on that question about the coming on the scene using excessive force there? Okay. All right, we'll move on to our next question, and that will go first of all to Mr. Mike Manzanares. And Mr. Sandbrink mentioned this briefly. We'll ask you a little bit more on this. What is your stance on all officers wearing body cams, including you?
Today, in this day and age, with the technology, everybody has a cell phone. So we can't get away from being recorded. It's better to have a body cam on the officer because you get a full version of what happened and not a clip that's come out on YouTube. You got something to be able to back that up in court, and you got something that you can play for the jury to make a decision that's not a piece of something that somebody put on YouTube. That's hard to dispute when you get say Rodney King. I don't know if you guys are old, most of you are old enough to remember that incident where a guy's hyped up on PCP and doing all kinds of things to police officers, but they only catch the part where the police officers are got him on the ground and just waylaying on him. And that's the significance of having body cam footage, like Mr. Sandbrick was saying, is that you're covered from beginning to end as long as the officers are using it correctly.
All right, anybody else want to comment on the body cams? What's your stance on using body cams? Mr. Tomlinson, reaching for the microphone, Mr. David Tomlinson. David?
I'd have to agree. Body cams are one of the most important pieces of equipment we can have as law enforcement. See, I never wore one until I started here with Ray Burnham. I didn't have a clue. I'd never had one on until I started working here and then was wearing them, and they are a great tool to use. And we had a policy that if you made any contact with citizens, it was on. It was always on if you made a contact, or if you was at the gas pump and had somebody come up and ask you a question and want to file a complaint, your body camera always went on immediately. So body cams will be worn and utilized.
All right, anybody else want to comment on that question about body cams? Yes, no. If not, we'll move on to the next question, okay? Nobody else is raising their hand. We'll move on to the next question. This will go, first of all, to Mr. Ronnie Mazak. What will be your policy regarding officers and using county-owned vehicles for excessive private use? Mr. Mazak, first of all.
I don't agree with it. I mean, I feel like, you know, if you have personal stuff you need to do, as the sheriff, though, they are on duty. But if they've got something they need to do somewhere else, they need to take their own vehicle. Do that way. I mean, it's, of course, I drive my truck everywhere, my Airmark truck, but, you know, that's, I'm always working. But if you're doing something that you're not, you know, not county, I don't feel like you should, you know, drive that vehicle.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mazak. Anybody else want to comment on that question? Okay, we'll start at the end of the table here. Mr. Acree, go ahead.
Use of official vehicles is extremely important. Everyone knows, as the sheriff, you are the people's police officer. My phone rings all hours of the night. I'm never off duty. I'm subject to call 24 hours, 365 days a year. I was at a private venue just outside the county line, and I was in my county-issued vehicle. I got a phone call that two deputies were involved in a shooting, and dispatch could not make any more contact with them. Luckily, I have all my gear issued in my car, ready to go. Rifles, tac vests, everything I need to do outside of the 10-hour working day when I'm in the office in uniform is in my vehicle. And I was able to respond a lot faster and get there on scene, as opposed to if I was in a private vehicle or, you know, in our family vehicle. So there's pros and cons to it, but it's your responsibility as the sheriff, as their elected official, to respond when the public needs you to respond. Always on call, always on duty.
I think I saw some other hands. Mr. Manzanares, you have same question to you.
I actually agree with what he said about always on call and always on duty. There's a couple of things that I think that should be done a little differently, though. When you're driving around a police vehicle, the public should know that it's a police vehicle. So if you're driving around an SUV that has no markings on it whatsoever, no light bar on top of it, and, you know, they may have an official tag on the back of it, especially at nighttime, you're not going to know if that's the police or not. So personally, I think deterrence is a huge part of stopping crime. If you're out in the public in a marked vehicle, then chances are somebody's not going to rob something if they see a sheriff's car go by. So using it for something in that nature, I think, is extremely important for you to be there to do that. But I also think that you should not, under any circumstances, put your family in jeopardy by sticking them in that police car and driving them around. Because now, at that point, you're a bullseye. And if you're getting shot at, so is your kids and your wife and everybody else that's in there with you. So that's my take on that.
Okay, same question. Anybody else want to address that question? Raise your hand either way. Okay, Mr. Tomlinson, go ahead.
Official vehicles are for official use only. I mean, I was a canine handler. I didn't drive around in my Trigg County Sheriff Tahoe Cruiser everywhere I went just because I was a canine handler. You know, we have to, as a sheriff, you have to adjust and make a schedule for that, especially now with everything the way it is, fuel prices, the way they are, maintenance. Just can't afford just to be driving those cruisers around like that. So I would disagree with it.
Okay. Mr. Sandbrink, you want to comment on that? Okay, Mr. Mike Sandbrink, same question.
When we took over in 20, we kind of went after a state police policy. State police provided you to use your cruiser for work and gym. So that's kind of how we started out. You were allowed to take your cruiser to the gym. For me, where I live in Cerulean, I was closer to Planet Fitness in Hopkinsville than I was the state park in Berkeley. So I've been gone since April, so I know the gas prices have done nothing but skyrocket since then, and I'm quite certain that is something that we would have to take a look at to maybe tone that down. But other than that, that we did allow for, besides work, for gym. That was it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much for your answers on that question. I think everybody answered that one. Next question we'll move to. Mr. David Tomlinson has this first. What will you do to improve the perception of the sheriff's office in the community as it stands today? What can you do to improve that perception?
That's a tough one after what we've had after the last couple of years. It is, bottom line, is get out and work with the community. I worked with the community when I was with the sheriff's office. You have to get out. You have to get out there and be with the community. The sheriff's office, without you all, is nothing. I mean, you put the sheriff, most time, the one in office, so that means you're the boss. So what we have to do is get out there, work with you, see what you want, know what you want, and put it back into play, build your trust, build your confidence back in the sheriff's office. And then we do that by getting out there and shaking hands, knocking doors, and getting involved in the community and the community services that are already here. We get involved with those community services with the community.
Thank you very much. Anybody else want to comment on that question? Raise your hand. What will you do to improve the perception of the sheriff's office and sheriff's department? Okay. Mr. Acree, go ahead.
How to improve that is community-oriented policing. Like Mr. Tomlinson said, getting out, being involved in your community. This is our community, Truro County, and I am the sheriff. Get involved, youth programs, go walk through the halls of the school, let people know that you are a working sheriff, not sitting behind the desk doing paperwork or whatever entails for that day. I'm a very hands-on sheriff. I drive, I get out, I drive all areas of the community. And being transparent, social media, that seems to be doing really well for us, letting you know where there's been a burglary at, where have we made a drug arrest at. The numbers are skyrocketing. Crime has always been here. It just didn't fall out of the sky in the last 2 years. You have a proactive agency out there looking for the bad guys, looking for the drugs. So complete transparency and being visible is what I think is helping the perception in this community.
And Mr. Manzanares, I think you saw your hand go up. Do you address the same question? How do you improve the perception of the sheriff's office?
I don't mean to answer every one of these questions, but I've actually done this for 27 years, and I have led three different posts. So I do know what works and what doesn't. I've led several men and women at all of those posts. So I do agree with the community-oriented policing. That is one way to do it. But the state police had something called Citizens Police Academy. Anybody ever attended that? So how do you learn more about law enforcement than actually being right there with them side by side and seeing what they do on a day-to-day basis? So the community needs to be involved in things like that and that nature, where it's a Citizens Police Academy. You're educated on what law enforcement does, how we do it, and why we do it. So just to walk you through what we do on a daily basis is 100% the best way to build a cooperating relationship with the sheriff's department and the community, so that we're both on the same page in whatever it is we're doing.
Thank you very much. Anybody else want to comment on it? Mr. Sandbrink, go ahead.
Thank you, David. Yes, okay. Thank you. That is one of the things that I have on my platform is Leadership and Enforcement Academy for the Civilians. That's been on my website for quite some time. I want to take a group of the community, do an 8 to 10 week course, 2 hours a week, And I want to show people firsthand what we do, not just tell them. I want you to come in and see the ins and outs of our court system, of our sheriff's office, K-9, and all that. And I would have an open door policy to this. And like Mr. Manzanares said, I think that would be a great thing for this this office to do.
All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else on that question? If not, we'll move to the next question. Mr. Sandbrink, you'll have this one first of all. So you get ready to stand up again. How would you handle, all right, here we go. How would you handle sexual harassment complaints? How do you handle those in the sheriff's office and as sheriff?
Thank you for that question. So sexual harassment complaints, we did have some. Again, that's an integral part. I'm going to go back to body cam. Body cams don't lie. And if there's a complaint that comes in one way or another, and I have no body cam to back up anything, you know, that's something that we're going to need to dig deeper into. And it's something I obviously and surely will not tolerate.
Anybody else want to comment on that question? How would you handle sexual harassment complaints? If not, if so, raise your hand. If not, we'll move on. Mr. Manzanares, go ahead.
Sorry again. One of these things, I mean, there has to be a policy in place to cover this. So everything that you do when it gets reported to you has to be investigated. I have investigated multiple police officers over the course of my career. State Police is the premier agency to investigate other law enforcement agencies. That's what we did. So I did it internally with guys, and I did it externally with other departments. I've had the unfortunate experience of putting a major with the Hopkinsville Police Department in prison. He died there of cancer. It wasn't fun, but it had to be done. So every little thing that's come to you, no matter what it is, you've got to look into it, and you've got to look into it with an unbiased lens, regardless of what the complaint is. So,
all right, thank you very much. Anybody else? Mr. Ager, go ahead.
Yeah, just like Mr. Manzanares said, there is a policy in place at the Trier County Sheriff's Office. Sexual harassment policy is in place and is mandatory by CAECO, who insures our county in case there was a suit or a complaint filed against an employee in the county. It is not tolerated at all. Completely unacceptable in-house sexual misconduct. It's you got to have policies in place to go along to be protected by CAECO.
All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else on that question? I think a couple of you haven't responded. So if not, we'll move forward to our next question. And this will go, we'll start back at the end of the line again. Mr. Acree, first of all, to you. Crisis intervention. Would you throw a man in jail for just asking for help? Or how do you deal with crisis intervention as sheriff and in your department as well? Crisis intervention, say somebody's having some mental issues, struggles, anything like that, crisis intervention.
That's a great question. Mental health is a big issue, not in just Trier County, it's a nationwide issue. But it's your job as a police officer to make sure you have the adequate training. Crisis intervention training is implemented in our agency. I'm crisis intervention trained. I've got several deputies crisis intervention trained. I've got two on the waiting list right now, and we will have a complete department of crisis intervention trained deputies. It's extremely important to be able to differentiate between, is this person suffering a mental illness? Is he under the influence of alcohol? Is he under the influence of drug? So you can't just go straight to, oh, he's under the influence, he needs to trip to jail. People need help in this community. It's our job as law enforcement officers to provide the adequate services to get this person help. So I do think it is very important that we address mental health in this county.
Same question. Anybody else wants to answer that? Mr. Tomlinson, go ahead. Crisis intervention. How do you handle that as a sheriff in the sheriff's department?
The same way. I'm CIT certified when I was the sergeant, canine handler there. Every deputy we have were CIT certified and trained. Additionally, what I would like to do further than that is to incorporate outside agencies, Seasons Behavioral Health. I mean, I'm married to a woman that does this every day. And I get a firsthand clash 7 days a week most time. I get a clash about it all the time. It's very important. And we have an opportunity when we're responding to make a decision on how to handle that situation en route there. So if it's that situation, and they need to be trained, they need to be certified in it so that we can help, not hurt.
Mr. Sandberg, go ahead. Next time to answer the question.
Okay. I get it, and I think everyone in this room has lived through the past couple years of COVID and the lockdowns, and it brought out a lot of exasperated mental health issues, substance abuse, on and on. One of the things that I would was wanting to implement is a monthly meeting community with community members and us and other leaders of the community for people suffering with PTSD. That can go from anywhere from childhood, first responders, to veterans. We have a lot of veterans in this community. I think it would be good to start a network, a buddy system, where we all know each other. You know, if I'm the one that's called to somebody that's having an event, you know this face, and you know Mike's coming to the door. So knowing who's responding, I think, is a huge deal. As sheriff, I'm going to have every one of my deputies there, and you'll know any one of them that's going to come and arrive to that call.
Thank you very much. Mr. Manzanares, go ahead.
I'm going to be quick on this one. Anybody ever heard of Celebrate Recovery? Show of hands, right? Celebrate Recovery is a ministry that deals with hurts, habits, and hang-ups, and I'm an active person in that ministry. We've got a ministry that we're launching at our church called The Landing. It does the same thing for 13 to 17-year-olds. I've actually talked to the way about helping with kids in crisis. This is not, everybody thinks that Celebrate Recovery is something about addicts. It's not. It's about depression. It's about anger management. It's about you lost your mom and you can't get over it. It's about everything you could possibly think of that life throws you and gives you a black eye at. And I've been actively involved in that since before I even decided to run for this. Mental health is something that I've been working on for a long time. So that being said.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Manzanares. Anybody else on that question? Not, we'll move on to one more question. I've still got three or four more questions I could ask, but I think for the interest of time, and I think we've covered a lot of great subjects tonight. I appreciate all you being very candid in your answers. I think this is important, though, as we ask this last question. We'll start with Mr. Manzanares. First of all, on this one, if elected sheriff, how will you invest in the youth of Trigg County?
Well, I just covered that. I'm actually the lead male minister in The Landing that's going to be launched here in November. I've been talking in concert with the pastor and the minister for the adults of CR to get this thing started, and I actually was going to start it in July. But lo and behold, I wound up filing as a write-in candidate to be your sheriff. It didn't matter to me whether or not I was your sheriff or not. What matters to me is that we are there for the kids that are having the problems that are going to create adult problems going forward. Because 13 is the most impressionable age. If you, anybody in here has had a 13-year-old or has one, knows that 13 is the most impressionable age that you can have as a kid, especially in girls. And they need to be, somebody needs to be there for them before life kicks them in the teeth. So.
Thank you very much. Again, we'll go, whoever wants to answer it next, Mr. Akery, I thank you. Okay, go ahead. What will you do to invest in the youth of Trigg County?
Well, I think we can do the most we can with what we got. Everybody wants programs and activities. A big one here is at the Way Center is being seen, coming in, interacting with the children, letting them see that you're more than just someone who can put them in jail or their parents in jail. It all starts with the youth. We don't lock up 7-year-olds. We don't send 10-year-olds to prison. It starts in the house, the foundation, you know, and it's our job as law enforcement officers to educate the public when they call and say, hey, my 10-year-old refusing to get out of bed and not go to school. A A lot of police officers dread those calls, but I make sure my guys respond to those calls and educate the parents and the children of the importance of exuding responsibility as a young adult. That way, they're not visiting our justice system there on Main Street. So it goes along lines of just being involved, not necessarily a certain program. Just show up and be seen and talk to them and let them know that you're a human being just like they are.
Mr. Sam Brink, same question. What will you do to invest in the youth of our community?
There is a program, and it's in the Pennyrail area. It's called CCC. It's Community Collaboration for Children. It's, as I said, in this whole Pennyrail area, the Trigg County is the most underserved. CCC is somebody that can come in when we, as law enforcement, arrive, and it's something that doesn't rise to the level of law enforcement or DCBS coming in. CCC will come in, and it's 10 or 12 weeks, 2 hours, and they will come in and do parenting classes. They give them the ability, provide essentials for the family, and teach them, you know, how to make the home a safer place. And it eases up the burden on our law enforcement and the DCBS end. It's a great program.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Tomlinson, same question. What do you do to invest in youth of Trigg County?
Well, I'd have to agree with Acree and Mr. Sam Brink. It starts here. You know, the way has got a great program. We'd be here, we'd be involved. We show up. Another issue that we're having as far as our youth is concerned is bullying. Physical bullying, cyber bullying. We need to be in that school. We need to be, you know, get with the teachers, the principal, and set aside a day or during the week or once a month where we can go in and talk to these kids and teach them about bullying and cyberbullying and what to do and what not to do and how to react. It lets them know that we're there to help them, not to hurt them. And then if we can get to them before we have to put them in the criminal justice system, that is the best way to do it, is reach them before, being able to let them know that we're human, that they can talk to us, so they can come to us.
Anybody else on that question? Mr. Mazak, do you want to comment on that? Or if not, he could grab the microphone there, Mr. Mazak. And what do you do to invest in the youth of Trigg County?
Well, I feel like we need to show them that we're not bad people. We're not out there arresting them all. I agree with what both of them said. Just kind of encourage them to be law enforcement, because, I mean, our children are what we have. If we don't encourage them to be here, we're not going to have law enforcement when we get older. I mean, just show them it's good sides to it, good sides to people. Like I said, show them you're human. You know, you're just like everybody else, and just try to teach them the right way to go.
All right, one more question. I saw another question here that came up, and I think this is a good one to ask as well. In the past, the animal control officer position has been under the Trigg County Sheriff's Office. It's not currently under there, I don't think, but am I right, Ed? That Ed covers fiscal court, but should the animal control officer be under the sheriff's office? And if so, what can you do to take care of issues such as stray and neglected domestic animals in Trigg County? Mr. Mazak, first question, that's first to you, about should the animal control officer position be under the sheriff's department? If so, what can you do to take care of stray and neglected animals in the county? Should the animal control officer position be under the sheriff's department, yes or no? And if so, what can you do to better control stray and neglected animals in the county? That's kind of a tough one, but I know somebody very passionate for somebody out there. So maybe we'll pass on that. That's okay. Anybody else want to answer that one? No, Mr. Sandbrink, I think, grabbing the microphone. Oops, I unplugged your microphone. Oops. Ed, can you help me? Mr. Sandbrink actually didn't unplug his microphone, so perfect. That works out great. And I think we're ready to go. Okay, Mike, go ahead. Yeah, there you are.
On? Okay, sorry about that. The short answer is yes. The animal control officer needs to be under the sheriff's department. Years ago, it got put under the judge executive's office for certain reasons. I think dispatch spends a lot of time getting animal control officer, animal control calls that try to come through the sheriff's department. So I think it'd be an integral part if he come over on our side and work with us. I don't believe it needs to be at the judge executive's office at all.
All right. Same question, Mr. Acri. Go ahead and answer that question. Grab the microphone and answer that question. Just don't, you're going to use your standard, just don't unplug it.
All right. To be more clear, could you repeat that one more time, Alan, just so I have a better understanding of what you said?
Yes.
Do you think the animal control officer should be under the sheriff's department? And if so, how quick can you do to deal with some of the problems such as stray and neglected domestic animals in the county?
Okay. Great question. Rather, the animal control is under my command or the judge executive's command. Makes no difference. As the sheriff, you are the chief law enforcement officer of this county, in the city or the county. All calls that come through dispatch, are you're responsible for. Animal complaint, doesn't matter what complaint it is, you show up and handle the complaint. If animal control is not available, it's your responsibility. It's a call for service for these taxpayers. So I think that's it's critical, but at the same time, whether it's under the judge's office or the sheriff's office, either way, the call has to be handled, and under my command, it will be handled either way.
All right, thank you, Mr. Acri. Anybody else? Mr. Manzanares on that one? Then Mr. Tomlinson, we'll finish with you and last on that, okay?
I've never had the privilege of being an animal control officer, so I don't know a lot about how they handle animal complaints. But I know how I handled them as a trooper, because we didn't have an animal control officer in the counties when I was working. You had to deal with the dog or the snake or the whatever it was yourself. So I think the sheriff's office needs whatever manpower it can get. And if they're willing to give you the animal control officer, then all for it.
All right, very good. Mr. Tomlinson, same question, animal control officer. Yes or no, and what do you do to, how do you deal with that?
Yes. There you go. Yes, it needs to be under. Animal control was under the sheriff's office when I was there. I liked it. I thought it was great, because when animal control went on a call, you could actually go with them. You can actually teach, show them, send them to class. They knew how to write the citations for the animal violation. We had a kennel that we had set up down at the county yard, where we'd take the animals that we pick up, and then they'd be transported to Christian County Animal Shelter once a week. Had contacts for the cows and the goats and the sheep and everything else that we chased and herded as well. Raccoons, skunks, there's many people that, you know, we got contacts with to call and help pick up those animals as well. But animal control should be under the sheriff's office.
Just don't call me for the sheriffs or the snakes. I don't want somebody else can handle them.
Actually called us up for, you know, I actually chased a rooster around the parking lot of Motel 8. And when we called it, Miss Ramona, you know, I wound up with a rooster because we couldn't find a home for it. So she called me Rooster and called him Dave.
That's pretty good. You got your own flock of chickens after that, huh? Okay, I think we've answered. We've done a great job. You guys have done a great job answering some great questions tonight. We appreciate. I've used almost every question we've used tonight's been in the audience, and I thank all of you for submitting some wonderful questions tonight. We're going to finish now with our closing statements, and we'll start off with Mr. Mike Sandbrink, first of all, for your closing statement, about a minute or so for your closing remarks tonight, okay?
Thank you, Alan. I have a proud 24 career in law enforcement. I understand what's needed to ensure the day-to-day operations. I understand the court system, the indictment process, paper service and tax collection, etc. I think the sheriff should be of good character, should understand how to talk with confidence, knowledge needed when interacting with officials from federal, state, and local levels. Law enforcement is a calling for me, and I look forward to serving the citizens of Trigg County. And ladies and gentlemen, Trigg County has been through enough. The division, the lack of trust in those that we put in position of trust, it's got to end. Allow me to serve your sheriff, and let's come together again as a community that trusts those you have put in place to serve each of you. I'm asking for your vote as write-in Mike Sandbrink on November 8th. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sandbrink. Mr. Tomlinson, your closing statement. You got a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an honor to be here tonight. I'm very happy to see all of you out. If I'm elected, you will have 24-hour coverage. You will have faster response times. You will have deputies that are off CIT trained and certified. Okay, I will work as hard as I can to regain your trust. You've been through enough, like you said. I mean, I'd have to agree with that. The county's been through enough. And I ask to humbly sit here and ask, I've served here, raising my family here. I love this county. We're vested in this county. So on November the 8th, I humbly ask for your write-in vote for me for your next Trigg County Sheriff. Thank you and God bless.
All right, thank you, Mr. Tomlinson. Mr. Mazak, your closing remarks and comments tonight, okay?
Experience that all these guys have here, they've whirlwind me with it. And like I said, I enjoy dealing with the people I deal with at the jail. And like I said, I've seen bad go good. I've seen good go bad. And I love hearing all the stories from everybody tells me how they're doing good and everything. And I feel like I'm meant to do more than just work in a jail. And I ask for y'all's vote on November 8th. I'm not as good at speaking as they are, obviously, but I love this community. I have all y'all, you know, I care about everybody. Like I said, from the janitor to the CEO, but I appreciate your vote. Thank you.
And Mr. Mike Manzanares, your closing remarks, Mike.
I want to echo what Ronnie was saying here. I do also appreciate this community. I've been a part of this community ever since I was born, pretty much. When I left into the Marine Corps, I had a cerulean address. I was right there on the Trigg line inside of Christian County, but I've lived all of my life in Western Kentucky and spent a lot of it here. So this is my community, and I do want desperately for this community to heal. But I think before you pick the next sheriff, you need to realize that it's more than picking a patrol officer. You need a sheriff that can do conflict resolution, time management, scheduling, special details, range, Hamfest, continued education with all the guys, the property accountability, the budget. The list goes on and on and on. The sheriff's spot is the highest spot in the county. And you have to pick somebody that really knows how to operate in a managerial role and as a leader. Because if you don't, then I call that an experiment. And we've had too many experiments in Trigg County. We don't need another one. So I appreciate your vote. Write in Mike Manzanares. And like I said, I'm glad that a lot of you guys figured out how to spell it faster than I did. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Manzanares. And the final closing remarks from Mr. Aaron Acree. Aaron?
All right, thank you, Alan. Great questions tonight, guys. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Appreciate the opportunity to come and speak. As you know, I'm a hands-on sheriff. I was called here, and I was very honored to have the position to be called to be put here to be the sheriff. I enjoy what I do. I love what I do. Only thing I know how to do is be the police. I'm learning a lot. I'm being very humbled in this position, as most of you may know. But I'm not here for the money. I'm not here for the power. And I'm here for longevity. I'm not retired. I've got a long way to go before I retire. I plan on finishing my career right here in Trigg County. And when you go to the polls, I want you to remember one thing. Vote on what you see and not what you hear. Public safety is my number one concern, and going forward, we're going to continue to do what we're doing, skyrocketing numbers, putting bad guys in jail, making contact with the public, and earning their trust. So with that being said, I ask you to pay attention on Election Day, what you've seen and not what you've heard. I appreciate your vote. I'm Aaron Acree. Y'all have a good night.
And thank you to all of our candidates tonight. Great discussion of issue. Appreciate all of you being here. I appreciate everyone's interest in our election tonight as well. And, of course, we appreciate a great crowd here tonight at the Way. Thanks to Carl Heckman and all the volunteers at the Way for making this possible tonight. Thanks also to my media partners. We have Tanya Grace from the Cadence Record here. Ed Marlowe standing here with me. It works with us at the News Edge. My daughter Jenny Watts helping us here. Bryce back at the radio station. And thank you for listening with us tonight as well. We're on WKDZ FM 106.5. And this is Decision 2022.